thought was cool and so fine.
But my wife would never tell the lie.
It's all there in chapter 39 of Genesis. She was beautiful but evil. Saw a lot of men against his will. He would have to tell her that she still was his.
You're mine.
That's quite enough of that. The scene has moved on to Egypt, land of the pharaohs, pyramids, and a very large statue of a flat-coat retriever. It's a good likeness, don't you think? Joseph had been born with a silver spoon in his mouth, given the coolest multicoloured cloak as a teenager, and arrived in Egypt with nothing, not even his liberty. His brothers were rejoicing over his disappearance, and his beloved father Jacob was in deep mourning at his loss. Meanwhile, in Egypt, Joseph was bought from the Ishmaelites to serve as a slave in the household of Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, a captain of the royal guard, an important and trusted position in the royal palace. Joseph had lost everything. He would be starting at the bottom of Potiphar's household. Perhaps he had to clean the toilets. Or perhaps he started out in the fields under the burning heat of Ra, the Egyptian sun god. Who knows? But Joseph hadn't lost everything, because the verse 2 explains the Lord was with Joseph. God had never left him, and he still had his faith in the Lord, Yahweh, the covenant-keeping God of Abraham and Jacob, his fathers. That's something to remember, isn't it? Wherever you're going off to university this September, having to relocate due to work, or simply drifted away from church due to lockdown, God is going with you. I hope that is a welcome truth. But some of you may be thinking, well, that's an opportunity to get away, isn't it? But God's not that easy to shake off, as Joseph discovered. See, centuries later, David writes in Psalm 139, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far sides of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast." See, Joseph is a reminder to us that we can lose everything, material and physical. We can lose family and friends, but we shall never lose the presence of God with us. Joseph remembered God's promises to his grandfather Abraham that had been taught from an early age. And with God's help, Joseph prospered. Indeed, everything he touched prospered. Soon he was no longer living in the slave's quarters at the end of the garden, but was living in his master's house. Potiphar was a military man, a man used to ordering people about. No doubt his slaves were given very clear instructions and held to very high standards, just as any graduate of Sandhurst would expect of his soldiers today. And he hadn't got to be a trusted official of Pharaoh without being good at his job. So he was able to spot talent when he saw it and put them to good use. But it wasn't just talent that Potiphar saw in Joseph. Have a look at verse 3. His master saw that the Lord, that is the promise-keeping God of Abraham and Jacob, was with Joseph, and the Lord was giving Joseph success in everything he did. Now that's a remarkable statement. See, Joseph is the first Israelite to live in Egypt. No one had even invented that term yet. So how did Potiphar, an Egyptian with no concept of a personal, loving, universal God, recognise the marks of Yahweh in Joseph's life and actions? It's unlikely he would have travelled to Canaan and come across one of Joseph's family, isn't it? So the only explanation is that the Hebrew slave, called Joseph, had at some point sat down with his Egyptian master and talked to him about his gods, Yahweh, the God of his forefathers, who had visited Abraham, his grandfather, and promised that his family, Joseph's family, would one day become a great nation that would be a blessing to others. And perhaps Potiphar had listened very carefully and thought, well, it's certainly true that this slave from far away has been a blessing to me. He had noticed that everything Joseph turned to his hand to was a success. And very soon Potiphar made him his personal attendant. Then he put him in charge of his household and he entrusted everything that he owned to the care of Joseph. And verse 5 tells us that from the time Potiphar put Joseph in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. Very soon, Potiphar was left with nothing to do. All he had to worry about was what he was going to eat for breakfast, lunch and dinner. He was a lucky man, wasn't he? Actually, he was a blessed man, because Yahweh was keeping his promise to bless others through one of Abraham's direct descendants. Wasn't it a good thing that Joseph was good at his job? What would Potiphar have thought if the toilet bowl was always left dirty or the corn in the fields was left to rot? Perhaps he would have returned that Hebrew to the slave market and vowed never to own again a worshipper of Yahweh. You see the importance of doing your job well. Being a Christian is something that marks us out. Would your employer interview the next candidate who comes along who mentions going to church as one of their interests, or would that CV go straight into the waste bin as a result of the example that you have set? Now, I hope there is not a reason that you are the only Christian in the office. But there's something else that I want you to notice, because Joseph had learnt an important lesson. You see, instead of being his father's beloved son lying around at home whilst his brothers were hard at work in the fields, Joseph had become the man who worked the hardest of all and most effectively. And instead of being the boy who was desperate to have his dreams vindicated by seeing his brothers bow down to him like sheaves of corn gathered around Joseph's sheaf, he had become a man who looked for God's glory rather than his own. That is why Potiphar knew about the God of Abraham and why he felt the blessing of the Lord on everything that he had. God was with Joseph, and Joseph was giving the praise for the household success. Not to himself, but to God. What a useful lesson to learn in God's school of preparation. I wonder whether we have learned that lesson. Christians are called to be small whilst their God is big. That doesn't mean that we have to make ourselves even smaller in the eyes of others. It means that we have to make God bigger. Humility is not about suffering, low self-esteem. It is about giving the glory to whom it belongs. And whatever we have achieved, whoever we have become, the glory always belongs to God. But that wasn't the end of Joseph's preparation. God had another test planned for him. There are lots of people who manage to maintain high moral standards through the fear of consequences. They don't want to get caught. For others, not even that will help them. I've never understood why the President of the United States would even have the time to get involved with a young intern. I mean, isn't it that kind of work which is kind of all-consuming? Let alone why someone like Bill Clinton would risk losing all that position and privilege. But neither of those was the case with Joseph. For all his success in Potiphar's household, he was still a slave. He was far away from home and his family. His father believed him to be dead. Even if he was caught, he wouldn't bring shame on the name of Jacob, because Joseph was alone. And it must have been very tempting to risk the companionship which would have come from an affair with Potiphar's wife. She wouldn't have wanted the affair to come to light, and he was in charge of the household, so surely they could have maintained the secret for as long as they both wanted. So what harm would be able to come from that? But Joseph doesn't fall for the temptation. Why not? Well, three factors. Firstly, he considered his own position. He has self-respect. In verse 8, he tells Mrs. Potiphar, "With me in charge," he told her, "my master, your husband, does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am." You see, sexual sin often arises because we don't have self-respect. It makes us feel like we have nothing to lose, even when we do. Lack of self-respect makes a person reckless with their body. What does it matter if I sleep around and people think I'm an easy touch if I don't feel I'm worthy of someone's genuine self-giving love and respect. You see, lack of self-respect makes a person vulnerable, just as loneliness might make somebody vulnerable. Well, Joseph reminds Mrs. Potiphar of the worth that he has in that household. He's not saying it for her benefit. He's saying it for his own. He needs to remember his self-respect. You see, if you're a Christian, we should have self-respect. That's not the same as saying that we should be arrogant and boastful of all our achievements, or that we should be self-sufficient. If I want something done, then I do it myself. But we should have self-respect, because we know as Christians that all human beings have been created in the image of God. In the words of Psalm 139, again, we have been fearfully and wonderfully made. His works on us are wonderful. Did you know that you're wonderful? Well, you are, because God made you wonderful, and he doesn't make mistakes. In the New Testament, we learn that God knows every hair on our head. In Christ, we are the brothers and sisters of Christ himself, who is the firstborn in God's new family. And it wasn't a cheap adoption into that family either, was it? We were bought at a price, the price of the death of God's own son. So firstly, he considers his own position. Secondly, he considers her position. He tells her in verse 9, "My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife." He's trying to appeal to her own self-respect. She's looking at his well-built body and handsome good looks, and she's thinking, well, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. So he reminds her of what she has to lose. He's saying, yes, I might give you satisfaction for a little while, but it wouldn't be true satisfaction. It wouldn't last, because you're already married to another man. Tempting though it might have been for Joseph to satisfy his own lust and hers as well and jump into bed with her, he wasn't going to confuse that lust with love. He reminded her of her own position, which was a truly loving thing to do. Thirdly, and most importantly, he didn't sin because he remembered his own love for God. In verse 9, he concludes, "How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" Now remember, this is centuries before God gave the Ten Commandments to the tribes of Israel through Moses. Joseph had never heard of the Seventh Commandment. But something deep within him told him that to sleep with Potiphar's wife would have been an offence to God. Somehow it would demonstrate a lack of faithfulness towards God. Whilst God would be faithful to his promise to Abraham, Joseph believed that giving in to the temptation of Potiphar's wife was breaking his promise to God, his love for God. Not to mention, of course, breaking faith with Potiphar, who had entrusted him with so much. Joseph also knew that he had gained Potiphar's trust in the first place, because in verse 2, Potiphar had seen that the Lord was with him and gave him success in everything he did. So how would Potiphar feel about the God of Abraham and Jacob if his wife became just another one of Joseph's household successors? God's reputation within that household would have been destroyed along with Joseph's own. You see, the good witness that Joseph had achieved would have just disappeared overnight. That was true then, and of course it is true now, whenever a Christian falls into sexual sin. God's name is dragged through the dirt, as well as the individual, and that's the tragedy. In the end, if you have nothing to lose and little chance of being caught, it is only your relationship with God that will stop you from falling into sexual sin. So is your love for Jesus so powerful and real that you cannot even think of offending him? If you had never read the Ten Commandments or read 1 Corinthians 5, would you still hold back because you sense that God values faithfulness both in the promises he makes to us and in the promises that we make to each other? Like Joseph, we are not alone. Romans 8:4 reminds us that we live by the Spirit, and Hebrews 9:14 reminds us that the blood of Christ has cleansed our conscience from acts that lead to death. Led by the Spirit of God, Joseph fled from the temptation. If God is preparing you for something, don't be surprised if sexual temptation is part of the mix. Anyone who overcomes is ready to serve in God's kingdom. So listen to your conscience and obey the Spirit of God when he tells you to do a runner and to flee. Well, we're going to sing our next song now, and then we're going to return to the final point of the talk after that song.